Sir Harold Evans is with us, Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, here on The Paula Gordon Show. He has written They Made America, as well as The American Century, is widely known as one of the world's great editors and has had a distinguished career on many fronts. We talked about Kildall as we went away. It happened that when your book, They Made America, came in, I was reading Who Built America, which is sort of a companion piece because it looks at working people and what has been known as the new social history. So it was interesting to be watching these things together, which really does bring us to Kildall. There's more to the story.
This is your story, and I am deeply appreciative to see it.
The name is Gary Kildall.
I thought I knew something about the computer industry, and this is a story that I'd simply not heard before.
Well, this is a story everybody should read, actually.
Can you tell it to us in brief?
Honor the memory of the man who gave us so much, the basis of all software in the United States and around the world. The software industry was created by Gary Kildall. He was a California young man. He was the Mozart of code writing. Somebody else is the Salieri in this story, but this man is the Mozart of code. And he devises an operating system for the PC, which makes software compatible with any hardware. That was a fantastic revolution.
This PC being the personal computer, and this is a story that none of us seem to know.
Well, the personal computer was... Let's just go back a bit. So there he has devised an operating system for a computer, and IBM is about to launch a personal computer, and they need to find an operating system. Now, Kildall's operating system has been pirated by people all over the place, and he used to go around and debug it, their machine, and up would come up. This is the copyright of Digital Research, which was Kildall's company, so they would shamefacedly start paying the license fee. He never sued them. He was a tremendous idealist. He didn't believe in suing. He believed in loving. He also believed that anybody who invented an operating system should not own application system because, as he said, it would be a dangerous monopoly.
This being an open systems approach.
Right, exactly. It's open and it's free. It's what we're talking about secrecy. So IBM want to have a personal computer, a great initiative of theirs. They go to Bill Gates at Microsoft, and he has to say he doesn't have an operating system. He refers them to Kildall. They fly down to Kildall. Kildall sees him in the afternoon. He signs the non-disclosure operating agreement with them, and they start discussing terms. Okay, then they fly back, they don't like his terms, and they go to Bill Gates, and Bill Gates does something which Gary Kildall said he would not do. Gary said, Bill won't stab me in the back. So Bill Gates buys one of these, how can I put it politely, one of these adjusted operating systems of Kildall with many of the same features, and sells it to IBM. IBM put out a notice of how they're preparing for the personal PC, and in it they include the things that software operators need to know. Kildall and everybody in the business suddenly recognize this is Kildall's system. So Kildall and Tom Rolander, his associate, fly to Boca Raton and say, hey, wait a minute, what are you playing up? This is our operating system.
And it clearly was.
So IBM say to him, well, look, for God's sake, don't sue us. We're completely stymied if you sue us. Why don't we put out your system with the thing MS-DOS from Bill Gates? We know that your system's superior, but put them both out and then the marketplace will win. Gary Kildall says, fine, I know it'll win because I'm working on superior systems even more so. They go away. They don't sue. When IBM puts out the PC, they do something which they said they were not able to do, not entitled. They outprice Gary Kildall's system, charging it more than $200, whereas the Bill Gates system is under $40.
But
this was something which Gary Kildall's lawyer had foreseen, and he said, you must promise to market them at the same price. And IBM said, we can't, it would be illegal. So what they did was to just totally do something outrageous, and it remains outrageous to this day. And the story's, you know, worth telling, and I've tried to get an answer from Microsoft and Bill Gates about it, who told a Business Week that it was inaccurate, and I'm waiting to hear, because I will correct the inaccuracies, but as it stands at the moment, I have to say that enormous injustice was done to Gary Kill. Not only that, this version of his system that got into the mainstream of computer operations was defective, so we had more crashes than we needed to have had. We were held back. Now, Kilball's dead. I was lucky.
Maybe of a broken heart as well as having taken a fall.
Well, he got very bitter, but he fell and banged his head, and they didn't diagnose the clot in the head, and so he died of that at the age of 54. The thing which my story of Kildall is based, he wrote on a memoir which his family kept, and I went and I said, if you let me draw on it, I will check it out with various interviews, which we did. And I will be responsible for publication, not you, because they were slightly worried about it. But anyway, I had it legally checked, and it was checked out, and it also checked out in all the factual cross-checks, so we published it. And I think, actually, Bill Gates should now do the honourable thing, because he's a very visionary businessman. He actually created, saw the potential of this IBM personal computer more than Kildall did, to be truthful. So it's time to honour the memory of the man who created it, and I'd like to see him do that.
I can't let this hour pass without trying to put together, or asking you to help us put together, your experience in the media, particularly in journalism, with the kinds of technological changes that you write about. And it seems that in some very real ways we're on one of those cusps now where the technology and the subject, journalism, have come together in some very interesting ways. And another theme that we've talked about, which is the economic drivers, the huge economic forces that determine a great deal of what we know about the world around us. And, you know, on the basis of your experience and on the basis of your research and your thinking about this book, remembering that prophets tell the truth, not the future, do you have a sense of what we can expect from the media, what we can expect from journalism, a sense of the flow, the direction that will hopefully bail us out of what is a not particularly, I think, vibrant media now?
Well, it's not a vibrant media because there's been far too much concentration. And one of the troubles with the current state of technology and the current state of business, really, is that the powers tended to concentrate at the center. This is a very bad thing because pluralism is the name of the game, and the more plural outlets and sources we have, the better. The fewer we have, however brilliant a person, however even well-meaning a person who concentrates communication, it's not a good thing at all, because it's remember the great scene in the House of Commons when Neville Chamberlain, when he's still Prime Minister, he said, "Methinks in the bowels of Christ you could be wrong." You know, well, that's true. So I think that it's really dangerous situation in American. I've always admired American freedom of communication. I've invited the Freedom of Information Act. I'm really alarmed at the way now attempts are being made to force journalists to reveal their sources. And many the media is unpopular for a number of reasons. Partly there's too much pornography and certain cable channels and whatever. And nonetheless, a great deal will be lost if journalists cannot rely on confidential sources. We won't know what the hell's going on in the secrecies of government. We have a government which is pretty secretive at the moment. It's natural tendency of governments to be secretive. So technology, as Bill suggests, and the forces of capital accretion are tending to put a tight band around free expression and the free exchange of ideas. And the media, too, has many responsibilities. Far too much in the media, to me, and I speak as a newspaper editor, I sound like a gamekeeper turned poacher. I read far too many stories that are not substantiated, far too many unsourced stories, far too much bias in headlines. I thought that it was particularly true in the 2000 Gore election, where Gore was accused of saying things which became a parody of actually what he'd said. But erasing that fixed notion proved to be impossible. So everybody goes around saying Gore claims he invented the internet. He never said anything of the kind. So it is a worrying time, and the only solution I can see to it is to resist concentration, do not let any more concentration happen in radio, in newspapers, to resist attempts to throttle journalists, even though they may be unpopular. And I think for the good to drive out the bad. Well, there is bad, but the good to drive out the bad.
And we will rely on people like Sir Harold Evans to do that. We'll be back in a minute for a couple more minutes with him. Please be with us when we return with the Paula Gordon Show.